us out, and away we go.
Scott and Rick.
I don't really have a lot to comment on that.
Andy and Sunday have crashed. They've got into each other.
I wasn't listening. No idea what you're speaking about.
This is the F1 Podcast. Two soft compounds.
Welcome then to episode number 10 of the Formula One podcast, Two Soft Compounds. I am Scott.
I'm Rick.
And this week's episode is called Boring Barcelona. And literally, I don't know what to say. I don't know where Formula One goes from here because, once again, another 1-2 for Mercedes and another dramatically boring race.
Yep, looking at the TV stats, when Lewis Hamilton won the World Championship back when Formula One was shown for free on terrestrial TV, 8.5 million viewers. Just 1.8 million viewers.
Wow.
Watched Barcelona, apparently, and there's a good reason for that. I mean, I consider myself one of the most passionate Formula One fans I know. I know you are too, but I turned it off halfway through. I was getting so frustrated that I turned it off and went to the pub. Now, I know I go to the pub at the drop of a hat, but I turned it off. I thought, you know what, for the podcast's sake, I will watch this tomorrow. Mm. It's just, I could not bear it. And I've picked up some stats. Some of them, I think, are quite remarkable. For instance, and I've got a big problem with Ferrari, but I was also, as you were alluding to...
You're very angry, aren't you?
I am.
I'm getting nervous just sat here next to you.
I've got a big problem with Ferrari, but there's also a much bigger problem with Formula One itself, which is difficult because it's kind of like you say, what do you do? Where do you go next? My problem with Ferrari was pre-season testing, they showed real promise. Their pre-season testing qualifying simulations were faster than they were in qualifying three at Barcelona this weekend. So they've gone backwards. Mm. And Mercedes have gone forwards. And you can't blame Mercedes for the boring state of the races. They are at the pinnacle of motorsport and they are doing what they're supposed to do and they're developing and their team is rock solid and their strategy calls are amazing. And then you have Ferrari. Their strategy calls are just an absolute nightmare. This Bonotto, this Italian Harry Potter, said this morning that he thought the strategy calls on Sunday were spot on and the team did nothing wrong. Well, you need to get new glasses.
They are great glasses as well, aren't they?
They are. But I'm telling you, if he thought that was a good race from a strategy point of view, he should not be in charge of one of the biggest motorsports teams on the planet. Just unbelievable. Let's just have a look at it. First of all, a stat for you. Mercedes have had more 1-2 finishes this season than Ferrari have this decade.
Wow.
The decade's 9 years old. So in nearly 10 years... they haven't achieved as many 1-2s. They've only had 4. So my view of the race was this. Vettel flat spots his tyres on the opening lap. It was 3 abreast. The most exciting part of the race was that 3 abreast into turn 1. And then the whole race was decided within 15 seconds. That was it. You know, we had a safety car late on, which probably took 7 laps too long to clear. I'm guessing someone in race control went, we need a bit of drama, leave the safety car out there for a bit longer so all their tyres get cold. Oh, and tell him to drive slowly so we have a bit of drama. Because it was terrible. So Vettel flat spots his tyres on the opening lap. Leclerc is clearly faster than him. Really quite quickly, within about 2 or 3 laps, Leclerc's on his back. Vettel's on the radio saying, this is a pain in the backside. My tyres have gone. Pit me. Pit me now. At one point he said, I don't even care if I come out in traffic. Just pit me. It took them 13 laps to make that decision, to let Leclerc go past. So then they come in, Vettel pits, he goes on to mediums, then they pit Leclerc, put him on hard tyres. Why? But because Leclerc's ahead, he gets out ahead of Vettel, and then he's blocking Vettel! And he's blocking Vettel for 5 laps, which means Vettel's losing all the best of the tyres he's just switched to, stuck behind his teammate. Then they make the switch again. Oh, and mind you, this is after those first 2 pit stops, which took 4.5 seconds long because they had a problem with the rear wheel gun. Didn't happen once, it happened twice with both cars. So when they realised they had a problem with the wheel gun, they didn't sort it. They waited until the next pit stop and the same thing happened. Ah, mad.
Well, so what I've sort of worked out from this conversation is we should probably get a counsellor in just to check you're all right after all the races from now on. And how's your blood pressure medication? Is that to go up a little notch or two?
Yeah, definitely did on Sunday. I could not believe the Ferrari pit calls. And when we talk about Formula One in general, you know, they introduced this new aero concept for the front wings. You look at the front wings now, they're very simple to look at. And all the teams have done is put slots and vents and widgets and all kinds of stuff on the rest of the car. So now the floor is covered in all these aero additions. You've got the barge boards, which look like something out of some sort of fantasy castle. So that's where the development's gone this year. Mercedes have got it spot on, and nothing wrong with that. That's what they're supposed to be doing. They're supposed to be, you know, from their point of view, winning every race, which is exactly how it's going to be, I think, for the rest of the season. I can't see Ferrari making fundamental changes to their aero package that is going to catch up with Mercedes. And they're also, and this is the other problem with Formula One, is they introduced what Martin, I thought, quite rightly referred to as chewing gum tyres. So these tyres from Pirelli that have to be in a certain operating window to work properly. Just make us tyres that get the car around the track and they switch on straight away. Mm. They try to make... So what happens in Formula One is people complain and they make little tweaks as they go down the years. And each tweak adds to the previous tweak. And then you end up with this mismatch where you've got cars that just can't compete with each other. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, what you said about Ferrari is exactly what they did last year. They started off great at the start of the season. They then went backwards halfway through the season, didn't they? And, you know, at one point, Vettel was ahead, quite dramatically ahead of Hamilton last year, and then he fell back, and then obviously we know what happened, and Hamilton ended up winning the title. They've done exactly the same thing just earlier on in the season. And like you say, they're making some of the best road cars in the world. They have some of the best mechanics and mechanical and aerodynamic minds in the business. They've got some of the best road cars you can buy. You know, they have 100 million rumoured more budget than anybody else just because they've been in Formula One the longest. You know, they've got all these things at their disposal, and yet they're being almost embarrassed. And it's just a very bizarre situation. But like you said, they've added too many things to the cars, and they've made the cars, in my opinion, too complex. You know, it's like go-karting. If you look at a go-kart race, they are the simplest machines possible. And in a go-kart race, you can say, right, well, I'm going to lose to such and such because I'm 4 stone heavier. You know, I've been go-karting with people that are 5 or 6 stone lighter than me that have never done it before, but they're not far off my pace because they're so light. Mm-hmm. And that is what it is. But they're just basic mechanical cars and machines. And Formula One has just got to the point where, you know, the cars are so technical and so advanced that it doesn't matter who's driving what. You know, you could put any driver in that Mercedes and they're pretty much going to get pole position and pretty much going to win the race. Great if you're Hamilton and Bottas and you're in those cars, but not so great for everybody else. But it's something needs to change.
And also, have you noticed this season as well, is no one's making mistakes. So we're not getting the added drama of someone spinning off during the race. We're not getting the added drama of extra than normal safety cars. We're not getting the added drama of wheels falling off. Everything has become sterilised and clinical and, you know, and pinnacle of motorsport, which is why it's difficult to figure out where they go from here. You know, I would like a simpler aero package where you couldn't add winglets and slots and vanes to your barge boards halfway through the season, and you couldn't modify the floors. Okay, so they've simplified the front wings, making no difference to overtaking whatsoever, which I think we predicted at the start of the season. I'd like tyres that work as soon as you put them on the car so everyone is in the same boat, because at the moment you've got Haas and Ferrari who can't turn the tyres on when they need to. And then you've got, I suppose, you know, the star of the race for me was Max Verstappen, who is driving a car which is fundamentally nowhere near the Mercedes and probably not as fast as the Ferrari. But he's driving it in such a way that he's making results count, and he got on the podium in Barcelona. And I think he did a really good job, and he seems to have matured now as well. But even with Max, you know, he comes out with phrases on the radio like, I thought it was a bit risky, so I backed off. Mm. You imagine him doing that last season? Mm. I mean, he's matured over the winter break, sure. But we want some drama. We need some controversy that isn't about the processional format of Formula One. We talked last week about casual viewers. There aren't going to be any. And now there's no terrestrial TV for Formula One in this country. I really worry for the future of the sport. The reason people like me and you became fans is because we all watched it on the BBC. Every race in the 80s and 90s was televised for free, and now it's behind a paywall. It just worries me about the whole thing. And of course, then you're going to have the knee-jerk reactions when they change the rules again, because everyone's been complaining, and will it go to... It's a quagmire.
Nice word.
He's the guy. He's the bloke of Family Guy. Yeah, okay.
But no, you're right. And it's, you know, the casual fan, like my brother is a great example. My brother hates Formula One, and he always mocks me for enjoying Formula One. And if he watches the Channel 4 coverage, which is heavily edited, and the other thing is, you know, we live in this social media world now. So if you are like me watching the Channel 4 coverage because you haven't got access to Sky, you are waiting a minimum 4 hours till the race has ended. Now, I literally can't pick my phone up on a Sunday because if I do, I've had a text or a tweet or something that gives away a bit of a clue as to who's won. This weekend, for example, I went onto Instagram. Straight away, it loaded and I just see a picture of an F1 driver with a trophy. And I'm like, no, I know the answer now. And you can't go on social media. So that's another problem they've got is that, you know, the results are just readily available. Channel 4 are then showing it 7-8 o'clock at night. And the host of the show, I cannot stand.
I hate him.
He hosts it like a comedy show. So yeah. You've just got many, like you say, many problems. If you want to watch it and you've not got access to Sky, you've got a problem. If you have got access to Sky, the coverage is phenomenal, but the racing is still, you know, and people like my brother will watch it and just go, same every week. Hamilton wins every week, Mercedes win every week. And to try and explain to someone that doesn't watch F1 that, you know, oh, it doesn't, you know, it's not quite like that. And I know Brundle said it before on their coverage that, you know, bringing in the halo and stuff, are we going, and safety obviously is very important. Nobody wants to see anybody injured or hurt. Nobody ever wants to see that. But are we getting to the point where the cars are so safe that the drivers are kind of like, well, I can just do what I want. And, you know, the runoff areas, there's no gravel anymore. There's a huge tarmac runoff area. So if they make a mistake, they just drive back onto the circuit. And if they've got a fast enough car, they drive back to where they was before. It's just nothing. There's no excitement anymore. There's no one in the gravel. There's no one coming off. Like you said, there's no safety cars. It's just the same thing every single week.
I mean, we've had domination in Formula One before many times. You know, in the early noughties, Schumacher was winning everything in the Ferrari. Before that, you had Williams domination. And in between those two, it was McLaren with Mika Hakkinen winning everything. And then Red Bull with Vettel. You know, we've had that. But even during those times, you couldn't say those races were processional.
No.
But now they just are. It's just a procession. You know, there's been 5 races this season. 3 of them have been decided in the first 30 seconds. Nothing has changed. Mm. You know, we had some excitement in Bahrain with Vettel spinning under pressure and the Leclerc basically breaking down. But that was it. I can't think of another race this season where there's been any more excitement than that. You know, and we're heading to Monaco, and I always get excited before Monaco because it's, you know, a prestigious event with glitz and glamour and everything else. But over the last 5 or 6 years, the Monaco races have been fairly sterile. You know, once they start and you get the first lap out of the way, not much happens. And it's probably the worst track in the world for overtaking on. So, you know, is it going to be another boring event in a couple of weeks' time? People say, oh, but Red Bull will be really good there, and so might Ferrari be. Yeah, it might be, but I think Mercedes are just too strong. And like I say, it's not Mercedes' problem. They're doing exactly what they set out to do. They're winning races, and they're going to win the world championship. No one apart from Mercedes is going to win the world championship this year. No one.
Follow Two Soft Compounds on Twitter and Facebook. Search for Two Soft Compounds.
Right, well, while Rick has a nice warm bath and calms himself down, I'll get you a bath bomb, don't worry. I've got some in the cupboard. Let's get all the latest stats from the Barcelona Grand Prix. With all the latest on that, here is our resident stats man. You can follow him on Twitter, at Lights Out. Here's Nicky.
Mercedes continued to dominate the 2019 Formula One season with a 5th consecutive 1-2 finish at the Spanish Grand Prix. The team topped every practice session, all 3 parts of qualifying, and they set the fastest lap of the race. It's the second time a team have done that so far this year, with Ferrari also doing the same in Bahrain, though they didn't win the race on that occasion. The last time Mercedes dominated a weekend to such an extent was at the 2018 French Grand Prix. For the first time in his career, Lewis Hamilton led every lap of the Spanish Grand Prix on the way to his 76th career victory. It was his 3rd win of the 2019 season, as well as his 3rd consecutive win at the Catalunya circuit. He becomes the 3rd driver to take 3 consecutive wins at the track after Mika Hakkinen and Michael Schumacher. Hamilton set the fastest lap of the race for the first time in the 2019 season, making the Spanish Grand Prix the first time that Hamilton has taken 26 points from a Grand Prix. The only time he scored more than that in a race was at the 2014 Abu Dhabi Grand Prix, where he took 50 points for his victory, a result of double points being awarded for the race. It was Hamilton's teammate Valtteri Bottas who impressed on Saturday. The Finn took pole by 0.634 seconds, the 7th largest pole margin seen in the V6 hybrid era. It's the largest pole margin at the circuit since fellow Finn Mika Hakkinen took pole by 0.734 seconds in 1998. Bottas broke the Catalunya track record with his pole lap. Impressively, the new fastest time on this layout of the track was only 0.7 seconds slower than the fastest time on the circuit before the chicane at the final corner was added. Of the last 21 qualifying sessions at the Spanish Grand Prix, Mercedes have failed to be fastest in only two. That was last year when Ferrari were quickest in Q1 and Q2. Curiously, on Sunday, Bottas became the first pole sitter to finish as runner-up in the Spanish Grand Prix since Michael Schumacher back in 1994. Just like Bottas, Schumacher also lost the race to the man who started second on the grid. It was the 35th podium finish of Bottas's career, equaling the tallies scored by Juan Manuel Fangio and Emerson Fittipaldi. With Max Verstappen finishing third, the podium order at the Spanish Grand Prix was the same in 2019 as it was in 2018. Red Bull have finished third in all of the last three seasons at the track. Other than his four DNFs last year, the last time Verstappen finished a race in a position lower than where he started it from was at the 2018 Australian Grand Prix. The Dutch driver has finished in the top five in all of the last 18 races which he's reached the end of. Some stats from the midfield: Kimi Raikkonen finished 14th for the third time in his career. The other times he's done so were at the 2009 Malaysia Grand Prix and the 2012 Chinese Grand Prix. And the last time he finished a race but failed to score was back at the 2014 US Grand Prix. At Toro Rosso, Dani Kvyat equaled his best Spanish Grand Prix finishing position with 9th, which was also his best finish of the season so far. It actually marks his best finish since the 2017 Spanish Grand Prix. The last time the Russian finished above 9th in a race was in China in 2016, where he finished on the podium. With help from the safety car, 16 drivers finished all 66 laps of the Spanish Grand Prix. That's the most number of drivers to finish every lap at the Catalunya circuit, the previous record being 10 in 1997. Mercedes have now led the Constructors' Championship after the Spanish round of the season in every year since 2014. 2019 marks their second largest lead at this point in the season since the dawn of the V6 hybrid era. They're currently 96 points ahead of their nearest rivals. They were 113 points ahead in 2014. This current streak of success marks the third time Mercedes have taken five consecutive 1-2 finishes. They've now achieved the feat more times than Ferrari, who did it once in 1952 and once at the back end of the 2002 season. Mercedes have now had 92 victories in Formula 1, 49 of which have been 1-2 finishes. Only one such finish has been at the Monaco Grand Prix, back in 2014. No team has ever finished first and second in six consecutive races before. Will history be made with a sixth consecutive 1-2 finish on the streets of Monte Carlo? We've got 2 weeks until we find out.
Furious, but not fast.
I think Lance Stroll showed promise when he had two seasons in the Williams. This year he's with Racing Point, Daddy's team. And, well, he's letting Daddy down. He just hasn't been strong, really, in qualifying or the race. I thought the crash between him and Norris on Sunday was 50-50, really. It was they said it was a racing incident, which it probably was, but Stroll should have given Norris a little bit more room, and Norris perhaps shouldn't have gone slightly off track to try and get down the inside. So one of those. But I just think Stroll is being made to look really quite amateur by his teammate this year and by other drivers around him.
Driver of the week.
So driver of the week for me this week, I think it's got to be Verstappen. You touched on it earlier, but again, he's kind of out-driving that car at the moment, isn't he? Out-driving the Red Bull, and he's really making Gasly look a little bit average. There's a few rumours going around as well that Gasly, you know what Red Bull are like, they're a bit trigger-happy with stopping their drivers. And also rumour going around that you might have heard about Kubica as well, and about Williams having a bit of a wobble there and potentially replacing Kubica before the end of the season.
When it comes to Kubica, if I was Williams, they are still, despite the fact they brought up Graves to Barcelona, they're still 3 seconds off the pace. Kubica's one of the most experienced guys in the field. Just leave him as an in-race test driver for the entire season so he can feed everything back that they need to sort that car out. I mean, let's be fair, it's got the Mercedes engine in it, same as the front runners, and 3 seconds off the pace, just ridiculous.
Yeah, swapping drivers not going to solve their problems, is it?
Not at all, no.
leaving screeching skid marks all over the place. Two soft compounds.
So another massively dominant race for Mercedes with their 1-2 again. We've mentioned Ferrari, we've mentioned Red Bull, we've mentioned quite a few of the teams, McLaren we've touched on as well. Let's have a look at some of the others, Toro Rosso, for example.
Yeah, pretty good weekend for them. And I thought if there was any excitement to be had from this race, it was the scrap going on between Toro Rosso and the Haas cars, and the Renaults sticking their oar in there as well. Toro Rosso seemed particularly strong at this track. They were good at testing here as well, pre-season. So it's a track that obviously suits their car. Albon, for me, is the surprise package of this season. I think he's a really good, mature driver who seems to have little bursts of real genius when it's required. And when he's not having those bursts of genius, he's a very consistent driver.
I'm surprised at this point that Carlos Sainz is not doing better. I think him and Lando are very, very equal. That's not saying anything bad against Lando, because I think Lando's great, but I thought Carlos, for me, is one of those potential superstar drivers, and it's like you get him in the right car and we see some real magic. And he's been good this year, and McLaren have been a lot better, but he's not got quite that superstar magic yet. So whether that comes alive or not, I don't know. But Lando is, you know, Lando's keeping him honest. I think they're very similar on points, 10 and 12 points, I think, between the two of them. So, you know, they do it. And the McLaren team in general just doing a lot better this year. And we've mentioned before, it's nice to see them coming back up, because, you know, McLaren, the Williams, those teams, you know, it's nice to see them, after having so much success in the past, sort of get back up there. But that's good to see. But yeah, Carlos has been a surprise for me so far this year.
It's weird, isn't it? Because we talked at the start of the season how we were going to have these massive team battles between the likes of Haas and McLaren and Renault. Renault never really have delivered so far, so they're not the best of the rest. Maybe at Bahrain they were, until they had the double DNF. Haas, for me, very disappointing, and they put that down to not being able to get the tyres to work, which goes back to my rant about just give them tyres that work. Don't give them tyres they have to switch on and switch off. Don't give them fuel flow so they have to back off at certain laps to conserve the battery. Get rid of the MGUK. Get rid of the battery pack. I watched IndyCar, which was from Indianapolis on Sunday, because I was so disappointed in Barcelona. The IndyCar race was fantastic. It was really good. They had a bit of rain, so that adds to the drama. They don't have DRS. They don't have anything like that apart from a push-to-pass button that they can press for a number of seconds per race. So they could use it for 3 seconds on one lap and then 10 seconds on the next. But once it's gone, it's gone. Mm-hmm. Really good idea. Works a treat. The guy on pole position finished 9th in the race. There was loads of first and second place switch arounds. Really interesting race. Formula One could take a leaf out of their book, perhaps, as they move forward. But as for the midfield teams, yeah, I think Toro Rosso had a good race in Barcelona by their standards. Haas, you know, were getting amongst it, and that was probably the most exciting part of the race, when we saw the Haas battling with each other, and all that radio communication was going on. Gunter says, slow down, calm down. You know, for me, that was the most exciting part of the day.
I do love it when they talk to the drivers like that, when you think these guys are doing like nearly 200 miles an hour and they're getting to, the boss wants you to calm down. It's like, I'm calm, I'm trying to replace people.
Gunter says, what would you like on your pizza after the race? Oh, one mention I would like to mention, you've probably seen this, it's been all over the social media, I just thought it was a lovely gesture. There's this terminally ill 5-year-old called Ryan, and he sent a video message to Lewis Hamilton. Hamilton said he saw it on the Sunday morning and was inspired to win the race because of this little boy. I thought it was absolutely brilliant that a big team and company like Mercedes, they got the trophy from the podium on the Sunday night, flew it over to Ryan's home so he could have a picture with the trophy. And not only that, they took one of Hamilton's cars from last year and stuck it on his front driveway for the day. I just thought, what a brilliant gesture. Yeah. Some companies have the power to do these things and just don't. But Mercedes went up massively in my estimation for that. I thought it was brilliant.
Yeah, apparently the trophy still smelt of the champagne as well. So it was legit, the trophy that he'd had on the podium. So yeah, like you say, really nice gesture from Mercedes.
Two soft compounds.
All right, so we've already mentioned the Monaco Grand Prix is up next. Hopefully, this is going to be a bit of a magic race. The spectacle in Monaco is probably the best of the year, isn't it? The atmosphere and the scenes and the ships and the yachts and all the kind of, you know, posh people like with their champagne on the boats. I've got a funny feeling, just got a little gut feeling that it's gonna be a good race for some reason, because we're so due a good race after these, you know, these first few.
Yeah, I hope so. And it can throw up some really interesting racing, especially if the weather is changeable. Monaco can be treacherous in the rain. We all know that. It could be treacherous in the dry because the walls are so close and the track is so narrow. The glitz and the glamour, I think, is a big part of it for me. I always get excited before lights out. I predicted Spain would be boring because I've never really liked the Barcelona circuit. So, yeah, we're due a good race with some drama. You'll hear in next week's podcast, Monaco holds some special memories for me. Most of them brilliant, some of them not so good.
Involving casinos, by any chance?
No, the casino story's good.
Oh, okay, right.
Oh, the casino story's good. When I worked in Formula One for the brief time that I did, it was the first race that I worked at. So, you know, arriving at that and the pomp and circumstance and everything, it was like, whoa.
Yeah.
So I'll tell the story on next week's podcast.
All right, and we'll be back next week and we will be having a preview of the Monaco Grand Prix and hearing your Monaco stories. Looking forward to that.
Follow Two Soft Compounds on Twitter and Facebook. Search for Two Soft Compounds. Two Soft Compounds is a talk about media production. All opinions are our own.